Russell. He's here for the next 2 weeks, today and next week. So with that,
it's all you.
Thank you. Okay, my name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the South Dixie group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. You know, I told you guys last week, first of all, I want to congratulate Danny and Scott on their birthdays. It's wonderful. It's so humbling to be here. They're super people, and I really appreciate the fact that it's their birthday today. And once again, congratulations. I think I told you guys last week, first of all, what's going on with this room? I mean, what is there, a keg party afterwards? I mean, what would get so many alcoholics in one place? I don't know. So in any event, I think I told you guys last week about the birthday, what is that thing? For the first 10 or 15 years of my sobriety, I was told it was Super Bowl Sunday, 1981, and I had looked it up. I thought I had looked it up, and it was January 17th. So there's a bunch of talks and tapes out there where I say, my name's Russell, and I haven't found out I have a drink since January 17th. And then after about 15 years, I somehow was looking at Super Bowl Sunday 19. I looked it up again or whatever it is, and I realized it was January 25th. And then I've been lying for 15 years, and I really had 8 days less than, you know, what I had been. So I toyed with the idea, well, how can I have these tapes out there saying January 17th and then January 25th, and I was going to stick with the 17th, and who would know, you know? And I said, nah, I can't do that. So I guess the program gives you like a little integrity. So then I said, well, it was January 25th. Last week was January 25th. And that's why January 25th. And I got a call from a guy in California, Morris. And he said, you know, I heard you've been telling people your birthday is January 25th. I said, well, yes. He says, well, you know, it's really not the 25th. I said, what do you mean? He says, no, that's the last day you had a drink. According to us, your birthday is January 26th. So I don't know what the fucking etiquette is on this deal. But I'm sticking with the 25th. I don't give a shit. I'm not changing it again. Got multiple birthdays or something. So I think last week, this is like an emotional sobriety, these 4 week things. And although that may be hard to realize after you hear some of this stuff, but that's what I'm not talking about drinking or any of that stuff. They say AA is like a giant toolbox, has a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. And I may not be your wrench tonight, but I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, I've been dealing with this thing for almost 38 years now. I mean, staying sober and fighting the good fight out there and dealing with all the stuff you guys are dealing with, all the stuff you're dealing with. All you have to do is, you know, if you've got 1 year and you've been dealing with a lot of stuff, sometimes it's scary and, you know, sometimes it's sad, sometimes it's long. Whatever you've been dealing with for the 1 year, just multiply it times 38 and you can figure out what's going on. And so I want to talk about emotional sobriety. That's what this thing has been all about, and a little bit about that. Now, I've got to be, many of you who have gone through step series with me and things like that sort of know this already, but I've the longer I'm sober, the simpler this program is for me. It's like very simple. I am an alcoholic. One of the problems about being an alcoholic is you complicate things. You know, one of the things I say, you know, and I don't know, I believe it's original with me, but one of the things I say is I know what kind of program you have. You know, you have the same program I have. You're doing everything you're supposed to do except the stuff you don't want to do. And it's the stuff you don't want to do that's going to kill you. It's the stuff you don't want to do that's going to cause you to drink. And it's the stuff you don't want to do which is going to take the spin off your fastball and cause you to have a life of quiet desperation even though you're not drinking. It's the stuff you don't want to do that's going to keep you from experiencing much of heaven and being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You know, my first sponsor and second and third sponsor and all around AA always said to me, and I believe this is to be true with alcoholics, especially new alcoholics, that no matter how much you screw up this deal and how bad things get, if you haven't had a drink today, you're a success. I believe that. I believe that. Sometimes it seems to me, at the end of the day, after all the bullshit and the stuff you go through and my feeling of being a failure and not being good enough, the only thing I can say to myself is I haven't had a drink, and that kept me going. So I think that's true. But on the other hand, after you've been in here for a while, this is a program having to do with spiritual growth, the maintenance and growth of a spiritual condition. And don't believe the lie that the only thing this thing is about is not drinking. Certainly if you don't drink, if you drink, you're not going to get any of this stuff. But in the big book, it says, one of the things it said, and this is about emotional sobriety. Bill Wilson said the next frontier is emotional sobriety. He said the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. And last week I did a talk, and it was recorded, and I think I titled the talk something about idols, idolatry. It was what Bill Wilson talked about when he said the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. Because after you get rid of I've been to thousands of meetings, and I sponsored many, many people, and I've worked with a lot of people, and I got to tell you something, nobody's got a drinking problem. Nobody in here has a drinking problem or a drugging problem or any of that stuff. You know, I work with people that have 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 1 year, they're not drinking. And even the big book says the drinking is but a symptom of our disease. The real disease centers in our mind, not our body. And when I was going to meetings, from the first meeting I went to, maybe until the last meeting I went to, and certainly after a few months, it was no longer about the drinking. It was how could I calm down the horse shit that was my life, the crap that was going on in my mind, all the problems. And, you know, we could spend hours just talking about our craziness. I mean, you know what it is. You live with yourself. You know what it is when you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can't get back to sleep, and your mind's going a million miles per hour. You know what alcoholic loneliness is. You know how it feels to be separated. You know how it feels to, you know, worry about what other people think about you, and at the same time, you don't want anybody to know that you actually worry about what other people think about you. You understand what it is. You know, you understand what it is. A guy would say to me, you got like a split personality. I said, I wish I could get down to two, you know? I mean, I got so many of them flowing around. You know what it is to live as a sober alcoholic. It said men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol because they're restless, irritable, and discontented. You know the deal. Your parents don't know it. Your friends don't know it. The people that say to you, why do you still go to those meetings? They don't get it. They're not mean people. They just don't understand why you're still going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous when you haven't had a drink in a year. They don't understand it. You can't explain it to them. What are you going to say? You don't understand. I'm crazy. They're looking at you. They don't think you're crazy. They don't think you're crazy. You don't look crazy to them. And you can't explain to them why they're crazy because then you have to talk about eating dead babies and shit. You got to talk about crazy. You got to talk about crazy. Yeah, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. You got to talk about crazy images and things that go through your mind from out of nowhere, from Jupiter, and stuff that goes on, episodes, 10-second episodes you go on in your mind. That you got to talk about being in the shower and saying to yourself, all of a sudden hearing this voice saying you're an asshole, you ought to kill yourself, you know? And where does that come from? And how are you going to say that to people? They're going to think you're weird, not that you give a shit what they think about you and everything. And how can you tell them? You go to Alcoholics Anonymous and there's 50 people in the room that you don't even know and you just open up your mouth and blabber two things. They say, yeah, we know what you're talking about. That is the only place in the world that they know exactly what you're talking about, you know? And I don't know, you know, I was thinking about this today. Maybe I've got this wrong. I could have this wrong. Maybe I'm thinking about it the wrong way. Even though we're alcoholics and, you know, we think of ourselves as different and, you know, there's earth people and there's alcoholics. I don't know. I think that's maybe true. I've met many, many people that don't have alcohol problems and they're as crazy as we are. Mm-hmm. With the same type of craziness. Mm-hmm. The same type of fear. Maybe we're just lucky that we have an organization called Alcoholics Anonymous. We all get together because we had a drinking problem. Maybe if I took a non-alcoholic and planted his ass in here, and he got used to us, and he liked us, and he started trusting us, he'd have the crazy, he would sound like and look like he could probably give a fucking testimony, you know what I mean? And he'd start, maybe it's just that they don't have fellowships like we have. And I don't know. I don't know what the story is. I just know I'm blessed to be an alcoholic. Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me. curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about and telling other people. And I do know this, that it's gotten a lot easier for me for many reasons. That I won't go through all of them, but what's become clear to me, absolutely clear to me, one of the problems we have with this program is we got to filter through our brain. And that's where the problem is, you know? And because we may have the capacity to be honest, but it's all mixed up with all sorts of bullshit. And as the stuff clears up and you get emotionally clear and spiritually clear, all of a sudden the book sort of, for me, and I'm just, you got to understand, I'm going to be, I guess, 38 years sober, God willing, in a little while, and next in January, and the longer I'm sober and the more stuff I've gone through, the clearer this has been to me. Sometimes it gets so clear, you say, I don't understand why they don't get it. I don't understand why they don't get it. It's so clear. It's in the book. It's on every page. That the entire program rests on, and the most important thing is your relationship with God. Not only your relationship with God, that God sits on the throne of your heart, that your whole life is about God, that your whole focus of, why don't they see that part where it says, there is one who has all power? Why don't they say that nothing's going to solve your problem? There is one that holds all power, that one is God. Why don't they see that fact that where it says, see what relationship with him is right and great events will come past for you? Why don't they see the thing that says we're on a new basis, the basis of trust and relying upon God? We never apologize for God. Why don't they say that? See the fact that it says we must get rid of the selfishness, we must or it kills us. God makes that possible. Why don't they see the thing that it says, you know, if you make the decision, the serious decision for God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and do his will well, his work well. Why don't they see the fact that it says our job now is to be of maximum purpose to God and other people? Why don't they see all that stuff in the book? And somehow I go to rooms and they get embarrassed when you talk about God and they don't want to mention the word God. They want to use HP or, you know, good orderly direct. They sort of like know that God's around it, but they don't want to like admit to it. They know it has something to do with jumping in the pool, but they'd rather just put their little toe in it to see what the water's like. You know? They're so worried about just giving their whole life. Why don't they see the fact that there's this thing called the third step that says we give our will and our life over to the care of God? Why don't they see the fact that no matter where we are, our job is to improve our conscious contact with God? Why don't they realize the entire program and everything that's going to happen in their life and their ability to have the promises work in their life is going to depend on how much they sacrifice their life to God? Why don't they see that? And I can only think it's because of the disease. Unless until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and of true happiness, he'll find none at all. Why is it they don't see what the deal is? Why is it they get all squirrely when people talk about God? They don't even want to say the word God. Most people don't even want to say it. They don't want to say the Lord's Prayer. They don't want to talk about religion and join religious organizations, even though the big book encourages it. Says we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion, if we're really getting this thing. They want to really just sort of put it down and say, well, I'm spiritual, not religious, which, by the way, isn't in the big book, you know, really. I'm spiritual, not religious, sort of like we're like better than. All of a sudden we get spiritually prideful, like we're like better than Christians, better than Catholics, better than anybody who, you know, we're alcoholics, we're just spiritual, you know what I mean? Really? Really? You're spiritual? Yeah. Well, you know, you want to see some real spiritual people, the people that are out there going to Africa and everything like that and risking their life trying to help other people, you better go look at some religious organizations and some missionaries. You better look at some of these hospitals they've built and some of the things that they're doing out there if you think you're so spiritual. You ought to think of you ought to see the money they contribute, you know, to God. You ought to see you ought to try associating some of these people that go to church and see what they really are. Just because you're scared of them, because you're worried about what you look like, you know what I mean, doesn't mean that you've got the corner on spirituality. So what I want to do today, because I'm past, in case you haven't figured it out, one of the things that I do is I'm really past, I don't talk a lot about the drinking thing or the drunk logs. I have nothing against it. I could do one for you if you wanted one. I'm not going to. That's not my job. I want to talk about emotional sobriety. And what I'm going to do is, we only have about 15 minutes left, which is okay. I think I can handle this. I want to talk about, you know, it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like. So I have a couple of stories I want to tell you about my life, which may make some sense. You know, one of the things that you're going to need to do is, I may not explain it all to you. You understand? I may just sort of tell you some stories, read you a couple things. You might have to put it together for yourself. You know, you might just have to sort of knit this thing together and connect the dots yourself. I believe the stories make sense about something having to do with this program. Maybe you'll say to yourself, maybe you're saying to yourself, or maybe one day you'll say to yourself, or maybe you've already said to yourself, you know, I'm working this thing as hard as I can. Why do I still feel the way I feel? You know, maybe there's a person in who says, man, I've been doing this thing for a year, for 6 months, for 5 years, for 15 years, and I'm still a freaking basket case. What the hell's wrong with me? Maybe there's like one person. Maybe that's the person I'm talking to. You know, I said to my sponsor once early on, I had a bad day, and I said, man, the program's not working for me. And as if I knew what the program was. And he said, really? He says, no. He says, I'm doing everything. I was going to a lot of meetings. I was doing some stuff, you know. And it's not working for me because I wasn't feeling good. And he said, well, you know, maybe you're one of the rare ones. And I said, what? He says, well, you might be one of the rare ones. I said, it's the rare ones. He says, yeah, the rare ones. I said, which sort of fit in my philosophy because I had been telling him that I was different for many months now. And I mean, I knew there was something unique about me, you know. He says, yeah. I said, what do you mean the rare ones? He says, well, they talk about it at every meeting you've been to. I said, no. He says, Russ, every meeting you've been to, they've talked about that. I said, I've never heard me talk about it every meeting. He says, don't they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? You have done everything there is to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's not working for you. This fellowship and program isn't for you. You're going to have to leave. And I sat there dumbfounded because this is the only thing that ever worked for me, and my sponsor was now kicking me out of AA. And I was sitting there. I was dumbfounded, and he says, no, you don't have to leave, but don't tell me you're doing everything. Have you done your four-step? Well, no, you know, but a lot of us think we're doing what we're supposed to be doing in AA, and we're not doing shit. We're not doing shit. We're just doing AA life. We're just playing games. So I'm going to read you a couple of things, and then I'm going to try to tell you this story. I tried to tell it to you last week. It didn't happen. I don't know. It may not even happen this week. I tried to tell you the Mercedes story last week. And there's the Camaro story, the Mercedes story, you know. To trace the psychic change that's happening here in my life, there's certain things you look at, certain barometers, and one of the things you look like is what I think about women and what I think about cars. Women and cars are two good things to talk about. You know, what did I think about women and what did I think about cars when I was 18, and what do I think about women and cars now? You know, and you know, it sounds sort of crazy, but you know, if you're an alcoholic, you might understand it. But I want to read a couple of things first. A was started in 1935. Many of you have heard this before. It doesn't hurt to repeat it again. Because I want to sort of like suggest to you what the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is. A lot of you think that you're involved in something called Alcoholics Anonymous. You think you're working a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what you think you're doing. And you are working a program of Alcoholics Anonymous in 2018, the way the program is presented in 2018. Have you noticed we have this thing called the Big Book? It's our basic text. Well, that was written in 1939. It wasn't written in 2018. It was written in 1939. And if you look at the front of that program, it says this is our basic text, and it hasn't been changed. The book hasn't been changed at all because it's helped millions of people. But the fellowship has changed. Now, I don't know whether you've noticed this, and I love our fellowship, and I love alcoholics, and I really do, but if you, I don't know if you've noticed this. This is not exactly Well People's Anonymous. It's filled with tons of people that balk at doing these steps and, quite frankly, would rather find an easier, softer way. It's not millions and millions of people that are absolutely fanatical and can't wait to give up everything for God. You understand what I'm saying? It's people that want to figure out how to stay sober and still fuck around as much as possible. And feel sorry for themselves if they can't, okay? Now, I know that's not you, because I can tell you are a more spiritual version of most of the people in this program. But you got to understand something. One of the consequences of being an alcoholic is this incredible desire to have people like you. If you're an alcoholic, you're a please love me aholic. Why are they talking about me aholic? I know they think bad thoughts about me aholic, you know. What can I say so they'll think I'm funny or cute or smart aholic? You got all that aholic shit going on. And that incredible desire not only to be sober, but to be sober and cool. And sometimes, you know, in our society, the things that you really need to do in order to do this program are not considered cool at all. Sometimes the things that you're supposed to do in this thing in order to really stay sober, people laugh at you. They'll laugh at you. You know, and we don't like being laughed at. We don't like being humiliated. You know? And, you know, when you secretly feel like a piece of crap, the last thing you want to do is do anything where people are going to look at you and laugh at you. And some of the things we do are not things that are really accepted in society as being cool. They don't have movies about them. Movie stars don't talk about them. The people that we look up to don't talk about them. And so that's the deal. So in 1939, they wrote this big book, and they mentioned God a lot in a very, very serious way, very straightforward way. We try to put it down. We read the stuff. In A means we nod our heads, but, you know, we don't want to get too crazy about this thing. But what we don't realize is that A was actually started in 1935, 4 years before that, before there was even a big book. And in the big book, in the fifth chapter, we read it all the time, and I know I'm not going to be able to get the car story. That's going to be, as a matter of fact, that'll be next week, but I'll just do this stuff. What we realized is that it was started in 1935. And one of the things that we read all the time in the big book is this line: rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You remember that? Don't they say that? Rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. They use words like thoroughly. Now, thoroughly is actually, it doesn't say rarely have I seen a person fail who has sort of followed our path or done whatever the hell they wanted to do or followed some of our path. You know, they says rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And then they say somewhere in the big book, the great fact is this, and nothing less, that we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, and we're experiencing much of heaven. And then buried all the way down, it talks about how our revolutionary this whole thing is. And then it says, the central fact in our lives, it says the central fact, I wonder if people actually ever read the words and think about what they're saying. They say the central fact in our lives is that our Creator lives in our hearts and mind in a way which is indeed miraculous. He is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. It's repeated in the promises. People love to read the promises. At the end of the promise, it says, God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. There he is again. Mm-hmm. And I don't think really in Alcoholics Anonymous, people understand what AA meetings were. When they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, I don't think y'all necessarily really understand what an AA meeting looked like in 1935. I don't think y'all have a clue what an AA meeting looked like in 1936 or 1937 or 1938 or 1939. I don't think you have a clue of what AA is about. I don't think you have a clue. As a matter of fact, it's a possibility that many of you in here would, if AA looked the way it looked like when they wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you wouldn't even be here. As a matter of fact, you've even told me that. I've been to AA meetings where people said if they talked about God, I wouldn't have been here. I've been to meetings where people have said if they talked about God, I wouldn't have been there. Of course, what they don't realize is they're indicting themselves, because in AA jargon, if God bothered you in 1937, you wouldn't have been here. If God bothered you in 1939, if you didn't like the God thing, you wouldn't have been here. In 1935, if you weren't willing to get down on your knees and give your life to God in front of a whole bunch of people in AA, you wouldn't have gone to the meetings. Because the only way you got in the meetings is you had to get down on your knees in front of all the other AAs and give your life to God. That's the only way it happened. I don't think you all understand what AA was about, where this comes. I think if alcoholics understood how this thing started and what was really going on when they read these words in the big book, words about losing prejudice against organized religion, seeing where they're right, encouraging church membership, see to it your relationship with him is right and great. If you read these words, you wouldn't just think it was just some sort of psychological problem and they would just sort of throw that stuff in there to make you feel good. So I'm going to read a few things from the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers for you. And then you can think about it. You know, think about what they're saying in here, how they ran their meetings, and what the meetings were about. And think about the meetings you go to today and what they talk about, okay? This is on page 101 of the book, Dr. Bob. By the way, this is conference-approved stuff. So if it's bothering you, first of all, if it bothers you, remember, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause is, something wrong with you. So. Just call up New York and tell them there's some old-timer reading shit out of AA material that's bothering you. You know what I mean? And I'm sure they'll be sensitive to that. This is page 101. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was a very important part. The surrender, that's what they called it, the surrender. We don't have the surrender anymore. Did you know that? We don't have the surrender anymore. The surrender, that was a very important part, that we don't have it anymore. The closest thing we have to a surrender is when you hold up a white chip and you have to actually go in front of a bunch of people and actually pick it up. That's the closest thing we have. That's what we went from getting down on your knees, giving your life to God. In other words, you didn't get into a meeting until you did the third step. It wasn't one of these things you went to a meeting and you got to hang out for 5 years and drink and then come back and drink and not come back and drink and not come back and pollute the room with your horse shit and talk about all your problems and feel sorry for yourself and then after 10 years do the third step. You know what I mean? It wasn't like that. You know? You did the third step before you came in here. Everybody was on the same page about God. Now, you may not think that's a big deal, but you can't imagine how powerful those meetings were. No fucking around in this deal. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was a very important part. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. Bobby, who came to AA in February of 1937, recalled that after 1937, it had been going on for 2 years like this. Recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, you know how people say to you in AA, I don't know where this came from, they're brand new, don't talk to them too much about the God thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, that's not the way they did it back then. They talked about the God thing in the hospital, in the hospital bed. The surrender was more than important, it was a must. Bobby, who came to AA in February 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state that you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps. We call that the surrender. Now, what if, before you came in here, where this room is packed, what if they said, well, you know, you can't go in the room until you get down on your knees in front of us and surrender your life to God? I wonder how many people in this room would have done that. Or how many people have said, oh, that's okay, I don't need to go to this meeting. Well, there's a possibility that we'd have maybe one-third the amount of people that are here right now. It would be one-third the people we had right now. It would be those people that were willing to get down on their knees and humble themselves and say that. And then we'd have a meeting. That's what it was like. Okay? There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps. We call that the surrender. They demanded it. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over the Williamson's house. Dorothy S. M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all of us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about a half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking, white, serious, and grim. And all the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while, they would tell us they had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people that come in now would survive that experience like that, a regular old-fashioned prayer meeting. Next, this is on the next thing. This is Dr. Some people say, well, if I only had, you ever say, man, if I only had a really good sponsor. You ever think that really, the reason why you don't have a really good sobriety, because you really need a good sponsor. Like, you know, like if you could only like have a sponsor like Dr. Bob, somebody who really understood, somebody who's sensitive, somebody who wouldn't be like mean or anything like that. And I know we're like out of time, but that's okay. Don't worry about that shit. You know what I mean? I don't know. I used to drink in a bar till 4 o'clock in the morning. I had a wife and kid at home. I never worried about the time. You know? I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I say, shit, I think this guy's going 5 minutes over. You know? I mean, Jesus, Christmas. Okay, this is Dr. Bob Smith. This is Dr. Bob Smith on page 143 doing a 12-step call on Clarence. The brewmaster on Clarence. This is him doing a 12-step call on a guy in the hospital. Doc Smith came in later and took over. He sat on the edge of my bed and said, well, what do you think about all this? Then he paused and looked at me doubtfully. Clarence said, I don't know. He said to Clarence, I don't know whether you're ready yet. You're kind of young. And Clarence says, I was down to 135 pounds, no job, no clothes, no money. I didn't know how much more ready I could be, recalled Clarence. Still, I had to convince them I was ready. See, back then, the whole thing was switched around. You had to convince the people in AA that you were ready to come in and you were serious. Nowadays, we beg people to come in. They're trying to convince them they're ready. Then Dr. Bob asked, this is the first thing he says to him. This is the first thing Dr. Bob says to this guy in a hospital bed. Do you believe in God, young fella? He always called me young fella. When he called me Clarence, I knew I was in trouble. And then Clarence says to him, what does that have to do with it? What does that have to do with it? What does that have to do with sobriety? And then Dr. Bob says this, everything. So you think the fourth step has to do with sobriety. You think the fifth step has to do with sobriety. You think all these steps have to, you know what Dr. Bob says? This is everything. I guess I do. He says, guess nothing. Either you do or you don't. Yes, I do. That's fine, Bob. Now we're getting someplace. All right, get out of your bed and get out of the bed and get down on your knees to pray. I don't know how to pray. Well, I guess you don't, but it's all right. Just follow what I say, and that will do for now. I did what I was ordered to do, Clarence said. There was no suggestion. Dr. Bob was always positive about his faith. Clarence said, if someone asked him a question about the program, his usual response was, what does it say in the good book? Suppose he was asked, what's all this first things first about? Dr. Bob would be ready with the appropriate quotation, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. Now, I'm not going to read anything more, because you want to know something? If I read this whole book or anything more, it would just be the same exact thing repeated over and over again a different way. So what I want you to do is, now, whenever you... You can think about what was going on back in 1939. Whenever you hear the words, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Now at least you have a context to know what they were talking about. You know, I don't know whether you knew what they were talking about. Now you have an idea of what this program is about and how seriously they took this surrender to God thing. And so if you're in the audience or if you're trying to figure out why do you still feel the way you do, why haven't you been rocking in the fourth dimension? Why aren't you doing better? Does it have to do with you didn't do a good enough fourth step? That you didn't do a good enough fifth step? You know, maybe you have to do... And all that stuff is possible. But why don't you start thinking about how seriously you're taking this God thing? And I know for an absolute fact that there is very few people, maybe nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous is going to talk to you the way I'm talking to you, which is... A shame. It's a shame. Because I can tell you, in 1939, everybody would be talking to you like this. Dr. Bob would be talking about this. Bill Wilson would be talking about this. Everybody would be talking to you about this. This would be what you would be, was being dished out in Alcoholics Anonymous when the big book was written. So now listen, as I said, we're all adults, we're all alcoholics, you know, you do whatever you want to do. This is, I'm just throwing this out there. It's in the, I'm not making up shit. You know, this isn't stuff like I went to sleep, I said, I think I'll just tell them this shit, you know what I mean? I'm reading your stuff. This is the deal, okay? You're entitled to your opinion. You're just not entitled to your own facts. So, you know, just consider it, you know, the next time you're trying to figure out what's wrong with my program or what more I can do. Thank you very much.